what was your family life like as far as entertainment and what you guys did for your holidays and things?
I'm kind of a life when I was young. I was from a poor family. We didn't have much money or anything to do with. I was brought up during the Depression area or before, and them days we didn't have much to come and go on. It was a family of seven kids, and my mother and dad. But we always had a good time and everything. And my main thing in our family, we had love. And we didn't have to have a lot of money and stuff.
What were your parents' names?
Dad's name was William Adam Burkett, and my mother's name was Nettie Lorraine Burkett. Now, you want to, my mother's name before she was married to?
Yeah.
Her name before she was married was Heck. She was Nettie Lorraine Heck Burkett.
What were your grandparents' names?
My grandpa's name was Elias Burkett, and my grandma's name was Mary Rebecca Burkett. And on my mother's side, it was Frederick Burkett, Frederick Heck, and Geneva Heck, but I can't tell you their middle names. I can't give you their middle names. I don't remember.
That's okay. And you said you had seven kids in your family?
There were seven of us in our family.
Do you have all their names?
Yes, my oldest sister's name was Geneva. My next sister was Clara. Next one, and then I had a brother by the name of Otto. Then my sister by the name of Lel. And myself. Now I've got a brother by the name of Marion. And then I had another brother by the name of Clarence. And just Marion and me left out of the seven kids.
Okay. As far as holidays go, did you celebrate Christmas and Easter? And
Christmas and Easter was very sacred to us. Them was them days we lived. To me, we lived in the way that they were supposed to be lived. We celebrated Christmas as a religious holiday, and so is Easter. I mean, them days you didn't. Everything wasn't commercial. You celebrated it more or less in this. In the way that the holiday was supposed to be celebrated.
Okay. Did you celebrate the little holidays, such as Halloween and things?
Oh, yeah. We had our fun at Halloween. We used to have a lot of fun. We'd go put corn shocks in the road. Sometimes we'd find some outdoor toilets and turn them upside down or set them on somebody's doorsteps or on the front porch of the store over in Strasburg and stuff like that there, and we had to have some fun, but it wasn't, we never done nothing to be destructive or nothing. Most of our fun all happened within a mile radius of home, because we never could go any further than that. It was either walk or ride a horse or something like that. We didn't get much further than a mile away from home.
Where did you live at?
I was born in LaSalle Township on the corner of Alban and Strasburg Road. On September the 7th, 1917. That's 77 years old.
Did you live there the entire time, or?
I lived not in there. I lived in LaSalle Township right all but about 2 years of my life. But I didn't live in that exact house. I've lived in LaSalle Township all my life.
Okay. Where did you go to school at?
I went to what we called the Heck School. It was on the corner of Strasburg and Alban Road. I think it was called the Raisinville Fractional Four School. The old one-room country schoolhouse that's made into a house there now.
Okay. How long did you attend there?
Went through the eighth grade.
Eighth grade. Okay. What types of subjects did they have you
What's
study?
That?
What types of subjects did they have
Plain,
you...
Plain, reading, writing, arithmetic, and all the old ones at that time. I can't remember the name of all. We had reading, writing, arithmetic, spelling, geography, history, physiology, health, now I guess they call it. Mm. And that's about it, I think. It might have been a couple, and penmanship. It was very strict on penmanship in them days.
After the eighth grade, what did you do?
Huh?
After the eighth grade, what did you do?
After the eighth grade, my dad was sick himself, and he didn't have no money, and I didn't have no money to go to high school, so I went out and started working by the day. He started out working for 50 cents a day in my dinner and supper, going wherever I could to the farmers, make a living. That's the way I did all the rest of my life. Just, I was a farmer. I worked in the steel mill, which is now the Ford Motor Company in Monroe. I was a blacksmith, I was an electric welder, and ended up the last 30 years of my life, I drove trucks, 18-wheelers on the road.
What was it like working for the steel company?
It was real hard work. Them days I worked in what they call the old hands sheet mills. It was all hard work, all hand work, hot and hard work.
Were you there for the strikes?
I was there at the time. Back in 1937, 38, when they come into Monroe to organize the strikes, organize the steel mill, I was working there in the city of Monroe, and then they tried to keep them out. I was working. We tried to keep them out. That's when Walter Reuther was the head of the CIO at that time. And we tried to keep them out, but they didn't keep them out. They got into the Monroe. But right after that, the Newton Steel sold out to Republic Steel, and then Republic Steel closed the mill up and set idle a while, and Ford Motor bought it.
So when they closed up, is that when you started switching around more?
How was that?
When they closed up, is that when you switched jobs again to the blacksmith
When that closed up, I started electric welding. Now, the old Floral City Heater Company in Monroe, which was on the corner of 4th and Monroe Street. At that time, right after my grandma and me was married, and I started out there electric welding for 25 cents an hour. I worked 40 hours a week. Made $16. We made a living. Then I went up to the Monroe Steel Casting back right before World War II a while. I didn't like it there, and then I started a welding and blacksmith shop in Ida, and I worked there a couple of years till my health started giving out on me, and then I started driving trucks.
You mentioned World War II. What do you remember about that?
What do I remember about it?
Yeah. What things happened around Monroe?
Well, them were the days when you had your draft and everybody had to sign up for the draft. And I was right at the age where I was just about old enough not to be in it, but I had signed up. They called me up twice, and I volunteered once, but I never could pass the examination, my health. They never would pass me. But in Ron Monroe, it was pretty rugged in them days. You didn't have, your gasoline was rationed, your groceries was rationed, your meat was rationed, and you didn't have everything you wanted. You had to take it as the government said you had. For instance, if you needed a new stove for your house or something, you had to go down to a rationing board and you had to tell them all your life's history and everything, and then if they keep it, they would give you a certificate so you could go down and buy a new stove for your house, or if you needed groceries, you were allowed so many tokens for your groceries and stuff like that. Rationing.
Was anyone in your family involved with World War II?
My brother fought, was in the Battle of the Bulge and over there in Germany and France in World War II for about 4 years.
How did it affect the family?
Well, World War II affected all of us in there, and we knew he was in there, and we tried to do everything we could to get the war and stuff over with so they could all get home. I had a lot of... He was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge.
Did you have any communication with him?
Yeah, we did whenever we could, but at the time he got wounded in the Battle of the Bulge, it was about 2 or 3 months we lost him. What I mean, it was notified that he was missing in action, and then all at once we got a letter from his nurse, and he was in the hospital because he had got shot through his right arm, and he couldn't write, and his nurse wrote us a letter, wrote my mother a letter. Then after he got out of there, then why, got better, then they gave him a job. He was a cook in his company or what in the division that he was in. I can't really tell you what that was.
Okay. Is there anything at all that you remember about the way Prohibition went?
Yeah.
What can you tell me about that?
I can remember Prohibition. I can remember when it was dry here, when we had the bootleggers and stuff was here. I can remember talking about hauling beer and whiskey and stuff across from Canada on the ice. And my sister's husband was a welder and stuff, and he used to help make carts and stuff to pull beer and stuff across with. He also used to weld up these, used to call them stills, bootlegger stills, where they made bootlegger beer and stuff. It used to be one of the biggest stills that used to be around in the county, was right across the road from the Monroe Community College. It's an old barn, right straight across. The old house still stands there. Right south, just a little south of that woods, is an old house standing there in the field. And there used to be a big hip roof barn there, and they used to have a still in that barn. That's when that road was, when Raisinbell Road was then, was all just plain old mud roads. And where the college is was county farm. Right up in the front of the college, where the college is now, that little hill as you go in there between the two driveways, right, where them couple of trees to my memory is right in front, right out by the road. There's kind of a little knoll there. Right in there is what they used to call Pauper's Field, where anybody that didn't have no money, the county would bury them and stuff, and they still graved right over in there.
Okay. Do you remember the first automobile you were in?
Yeah. 1913 Model T Ford Touring Car was my granddad.
What was it like?
Just a plain old open car, side curtains on it and stuff. Had carbide lights on it. It didn't even have electric lights on it. It had carbide lights on it.
How much would a car have costed?
Them days?
Yeah.
I think I heard my granddad say, I think he said that car cost him about $350 new. First car my folks ever had, but my dad bought a used 1917 Model T Ford Touring Car. But that had electric lights, but they wasn't battery lights. They was Manganito lights to run off the motor of the car. That was a 1917 Model T Touring Car.
How much did the gas cost for him?
Huh?
How much would gas cost?
I couldn't really tell you. I imagine it was on the air. I remember times that I could buy gas after we was married for 10 cents a gallon. Well, I imagine you'll find down in that area it was about 25 cents, something like that. You didn't burn too much gas in days. You didn't have too much to go with. You didn't use your car like you do today.
How did you get around before that?
Horse and buggy, bobsleigh, horse and sleigh, horse and wagon, and walk. Like the old saying was, shanks, horses and shoemaker's buggy. That's what was the old saying when you walk. Shanks horses was your legs and shoemaker's buggy was your shoes. That was an old saying. They asked you how you went. They would say you went with Shank's horses and shoemaker's buggy.
Where did you go to get groceries and your clothing and...
Went to Monroe. Get our clothing and stuff, but most of our groceries we bought at the little town of Strasburg. It's about 6 miles west of Monroe just off of Dunbar Road, there on Strasburg Road. There was a little town there, Strasburg. It had two stores and a post office. And it had a depot there where you could get on the train and go into Monroe and stuff. But if we had to have clothing and stuff, we went to Monroe. But them days, if we had to go with a horse and buggy, it took us about an hour and three quarters to go 7 miles. And if you had to have an awful good horse that would walk a mile, 4 mile an hour, a mile every 15 minutes. We used to figure about an hour and three quarters to go from our house to Monroe. And there was no paved roads then. The closest paved road we had, we lived on the corner of Strasburg and Alvin Road. And we had to go 3 miles north over to M50 on Strasburg Road. And then them days it was called South Custer Road, and then it was a brick pavement from there into Monroe.
Hmm.
Well, outside of that, there was no paved roads on it. I can remember when when Telegraph Road down here, or US 24 was paved out in here south of Monroe. When it wasn't paved, when it was made, a lot of this road wasn't even made then. They just made it out through the field, followed the railroad tracks out through there.
Do you remember what any of the items used to cost, or close to it?
What do you mean by items, though? Groceries and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, you could buy pork chops for, bought a pork chop for £2 for a quarter. You could buy eggs for 12 cents a dozen. You could buy milk for 10 cents a quart, 6 cents a quart. And flour was, it was about 3 cents a pound, something like that, I've averaged out. Bread, well, we very seldom ever bought bread because my mother always made the bread. But if you did buy bread, it was about 12 cents a loaf, something like that. I don't remember at all, I can just vaguely.
Yeah.
But I know after we was married in 1917, and after we was married, I could buy gas for 10 cents a gallon in Monroe. And you could buy a hamburger for £3 for a quarter. Just potatoes, I think then, was about 4 cents a pound if you bought them. It was all, but them days your wages, like I told you before, when I was first married, I was getting 25 cents an hour.
Do you know what it was like for minority groups? Was there a lot of hatred, or?
Like, you mean like the black people?
That and Japanese, or?
Well, I remember when I was first a little kid in Monroe, there were two, I don't remember if they were Chinese or Japanese, they had laundry in Monroe. They run a shirt laundry in Monroe up on West Front Street. That's the only two of them I can, and the black people come to Monroe. They come in here to work in what was the old gas company. See, them days you didn't have natural gas here, you had artificial gas. They made the gas. And the gas house was up on West Front Street, right along in there where the post office is. Post office is now. They used to burn coal, burn it so far, and then pour water on it somewhere or another and get a gas off of it. And then that's what your coke is made out of. After they get done with that, but then they took that gas and had big tanks out there, and that's what they supplied people with gas for their stoves and stuff. But they didn't have natural gas around here at that time. And then and these colored people, they brought them in, or blacks, whatever you want to say, they brought them in from the south. I can remember, I don't think it was over 10 or 15 families that lived in Monroe. And the Spanish or Mexicans, they was brought in here to work in the beet fields, and usually they didn't live here. They just come in here during the summers, and they'd go back to Mexico or down more south, wherever they come from. They'd bring them in on train and like that, but then in fall, when the farmers got done with them, they'd send them back down to Mexico or wherever they was from, you know, to live. But they'd just be all very, they might have been, I'm not going to say this for sure, but I can remember like here around in Monroe County, you might have had 10, 15 families of them, but they'd bring a whole family in here, and any kid from the time he was big enough to walk, he was working in the beet fields, you know, hoeing beets and keeping them clean, and in the fall they harvest them. They had all had to be pulled by hand, and the tops cut off by hand, and everything, and loaded on the wagons by hand and everything. It isn't like they didn't have it, like they got a gnaw, everything mechanical. Everything was done by hand.
The kids then didn't go to school. They worked with right along with their family.
They would go to school for, the littlest ones would go to school somewhere. Very few of them, but they'd go to school a while till if the truant officers got after them too bad, they'd go to school for a while and then they'd disappear again. You didn't know where they went. But people didn't have the money. These people that they were bringing in here to work didn't have the money to put them in school. Them Mexicans and the Spanish come in here, they wasn't getting that kind of money.
Did you have to pay to send your kids to school then, or?
My folks paid something. I don't know how much, but I know when I got out of the 8th grade, that was in 1929, when I got out of the 8th grade, my sister wanted me to go to Ida, wanted me to go to high school, and we didn't have the money. My folks didn't have it. My dad was sick, and my mother was trying to keep us kids together, and my sister was old, and she offered to pay my tuition to go to Ida High School. That would have been $50 a year, but I had to find transportation to get up there, and that was 4 miles. I either had to walk or find transportation, and it was nobody around there was going, so I didn't get to go. I just started working. That's why I never went to high school. It was lots and lots of kids them days that never seen high school just because of transportation trouble and stuff like that. But as far as the tuition, it was very minimal, you know what I mean? But if you look at it in another way, it was as much percentage-wise or maybe more than it is now, you know what I mean? Figuring what wages was them days and everything, I think it would balance out further to what it is now.
Hmm. What was it like for your mother? What did she do as a woman?
My mother got through the 8th grade. She got through an 8th grade. She had an 8th grade education. She went through school. The school she went to was about a mile, wasn't even about a half a mile from the school that I went to. That school was all tore down before I remember anything about it. But she got through the 8th grade, but my dad only got through he didn't even get through the 4th grade. Actually, my dad never could read and write his own name until us kids showed him how. They didn't have the money them days. Said they had to go, and if they got a chance to work or something, perform or something, they worked.
What did your mom do at home?
At home?
Yeah.
My mother would just done general housework, and then she used to quilt for people, or quilts for people. She made quilts and stuff for people. She quilted them. Like that period. She used to get a cent and a half a yard for the thread that she used to use to making them tiny stitches and them designs and them on them quilts and stuff. And well, she used to get a cent and a half a yard for every yard of thread she used. That's how she used to get paid to quilt the quilt. Maybe it would take her 2 weeks, 3 weeks if she worked putting her steady, us kids, we had to do cooking and stuff, and she'd do that, and when she'd get done, she'd make anywhere from maybe from $10 to $15, and that's what we lived on. Well, my dad was sick and couldn't work, but we made a living. We never drawed an unemployment check. We never had a We didn't have no such a thing as Social Security or none. We lived on a farm and we cooked I mean, we canned all of our own food, raised it all and canned it. I say a farm, we had 18 acres, but we always had enough that we canned all of our stuff and we had just had to buy like our sugar and stuff like that there. And no, we didn't have steak every day, but we had togetherness. We was happy. We had three meals a day, and the way I said it, and we had love. My mother and dad raised us all family. We was always together.
Did your sisters follow along with your mom, or did they help out with the farm?
As it got bigger, they helped with the chores. The housework and helped out in the gardens and stuff. And then as it got bigger, they'd hire out to somebody doing housework. A couple of my sisters, they hired out to my uncle when he run the store over in Charlottesburg, and they'd help in the store. And I think them days they got something like 25 cents a day. But I worked many a day out in the field, thrashing, when they had the old steam engines and stuff, thrashing, making hay and all that. I got 50 cents a day in my dinner and supper. When I was a kid.
When and how did you meet Grandma?
How did I meet Grandma?
Yeah.
She came down to work for my sister when their youngest daughter was married. I was born. And I met her down there, and I told my boyfriend that I used to run around with, I said, I'm going to get a date with her. And he said I wasn't, and I said I was, and I got a date with her. And then about 2 years later, we got married.
When was that?
Well, we got married the 30th of January, 1937.
What kind of ceremony did you have?
We were married by a minister, but we were married in my mother and father-in-law's house in their dining room. But we were married by a minister. And then after we had we married on a Saturday afternoon, and on a Saturday night we went down to my sister's house, and they had a wedding gathering there for us, like a shower or whatever you want to call it. People come there and they brought us gifts and stuff, and we had a good time, had a lunch and stuff. Then the next day we went back up to my mother-in-law's, and they cooked, had us a nice chicken dinner and stuff. That was our wedding dinner, and that's as far. I worked Friday night, got off Friday night, took Saturday night off to get married, went back to work Sunday night. That's all my honeymoon was.
Where were you working then?
On the Newton Steel Mill, which is where Ford is now.
Where did you and Grandma live at?
Over on Alban Road. At first we rented an apartment from my sister. We had three furnished rooms, apartment. We rented for $5 a week, or $5 a month, I mean. We lived there a couple of years, and then we started going on my own, built and stuff.
How much did it cost to buy a house or build your house?
Well, the first house I had, first house that I built to live in, I paid $25 for a 12 by 12 room. It was on another house, and I had moved it over. I bought another $25 from my wife's aunt. I got some used lumber and I put another room on. That made us, well, the house was 12 by 24. And that was our first house. We didn't have no running water in it. We didn't have no electric lights or nothing, but it was our home. And folks give us furniture, and we made, my wife, she'd take orange crates, old wooden orange crates and stuff. That was our cupboards and stuff. Like I say, we was happy. We're just as happy as they are today where they have all this newfangled stuff, and at least we didn't know nothing. This, for instance, when Grandma and me got married, I paid $19 for her wedding ring. And you know where her wedding ring is now. You got her wedding ring.
Yep.
Or Melissa's got it, I meant to say.
Yep.
I bought her a cedar chest just before we was married. Bought it down to what the old Buckeye Furniture. It's where United Furniture is there on First Street now. And I got it right in our bedroom in there now. And I give $19 for that cedar chest. I got it for her the Christmas before we was married in January. That's the kind of stuff we had.
Seems like Mom, I think it was my mom that was telling me that you had met Jimmy Hoffa one time.
Oh yes, I met him more than once. I sat by him by meetings more than once when I was working down the steel mill. When I was working for Ralph Cartage, the Teamsters. I was a committee man down there when I was to Rouse, and we'd have meetings and stuff, and I sat with Jimmy Hoffa at more than one meeting right across the table from him. One of the nicest men I ever met in my life.
Did you learn anything about him?
Yes, sir. Why? I learned this much. Everybody said Jimmy Hoffa was a crook. Jimmy Hoffa wasn't a crook. Jimmy Hoffa wanted to see people get what they had coming. If you had it coming, he'd try his darndest to get it for you. And if you didn't have it coming, he'd tell you right now, you're nuts, you ain't going to get it, and he wouldn't try to help you get it. But if you had it coming, he'd try his doggonest to help you get it. To me, Jimmy Hoffa, they give Jimmy Hoffa a name that he should have never had, because Jimmy Hoffa wasn't near as bad of a man as the people that had him put in prison was. He wasn't near the crook that President Johnson and Frank Fitzsimmons and the Kennedys and them was at that time. But he stuck up for what was right, and that bit into some people's... They couldn't stand to hear the truth.
Involvement in the 4-H program's been a big part of our family. How did you get involved?
Well, I was driving truck for Raul, and your dad was about 5 years old, and your Uncle Wilbur, he was about, well, let's see, he was about 9 then. And they were starting up they were going over here to Custer School, right? And they wanted to start a 4-H club over there. And so your grandma took the boys and they went over there to see about it that night. I was working. When I come back, I asked them how they got along. Well, she said they want a club, but they can't get nobody to run it. No leaders. And she said that a fellow by the name of Joe Watterson, he was a county 4-H agent here then, wanted to know if he maybe would take it, or her and me would take it for 6 months or so until they could get started. And the 6 months turned into be 30 years that we took it. We run it, the Busy Otters 4-H Club here in Monroe County.
Is that one of the oldest clubs left in the county?
I'm pretty sure it's the oldest club running by the same name. Now, there's some other clubs in the county that they maybe took two or three clubs and went together and formed a club, but this club has got the same name as it had when it started.
Do you know when the 4-H program had originally been started?
Well, I can't tell you originally, but when I was a kid about 12 or 13 years old, I was in 4-H. But them days we had our 4-H meetings and stuff right in the old country schoolhouses. And we done our work at home, like our handicraft work and stuff. My uncle Eaton Merkin, he was over woodworking and stuff with us kids. That's when you didn't have no machinery or anything. Everything had to be done with hand tools and stuff. But we showed that year over, the building still stands. It's over on North Custer Road in Grape, right about where Baldwin Road comes out onto North Custer Road. There was the old Woodman Hall over there. It's a big cement, old cement block building. The hall still stands there on the south side of M50. I mean, of North Custer Road, just east of Ida Mabee Road. And that's where we showed our handicraft and stuff that year. And then they used to have a barn out there, a shed out there where people would come there, and then when they come with horse and buggies, to put their horses and stuff in, and they put gates and stuff in, and people that had cattle or pigs or the kids, where they had a few pens of them, and they had them out in them barns. And I was about, I graduated from eighth grade when I was 13 years old, and it was a year before that, or 2 years before that, that I was in there. So that's how long ago I can remember back. Must be, let's see. I'm 77, it would have been about 67 years, something like that, or so ago.
Do you remember when the first Monroe County Fair was held?
I can't tell you the exact date. First Monroe County Fair that I've read about was held. I don't know if the first one was in Monroe or not. They got news of that, I think, over the library. They used to hold them up in Dundee, and then they had them in Monroe. The ones that I remember in Monroe was held down where the farmer's market is now. That's where they had it. Then it got too big for there. Then they went out on North, on the old Dixie out towards Detroit Beach, and they had them out there at the old airport out there. And then from there they come out where they are now, and that was, when they come out here, was in about 1940. 46, something like that, when they come out here, what the fair is now.
What were the fairs like? Was it anything like it is now?
Yeah, sorry, it wasn't near as big, but they had nice fairs. We had good, clean fairs. We had fairs that we could be proud of.
They have the carnival rides and things now?
Yeah, carnival. I can't tell you who run the carnivals then, but I know what. As I got involved in it more, a fellow by the name of Gooding Amusements, Floyd Gooding had them. And then he sold out to what is Cumberland Amusements. Cumberland shows here in Monroe now, you know, that runs the amusements in there. And I've been producing in a fair now for about 42 years. We started going over there in 19 to this fair here and helping, and we've never missed one since then. I think we started over there in 1949, I think it was, 50 something like that. And I've never missed a fair since then.
Is there anything that you can remember that I've left out that you'd like to talk about?
No, the only thing I can remember They always used to ask, tell me that I taught the kids a lot. I never taught the kids none. I learned a lot from the kids, and there was a lot of good kids. And what I learned from the kids, I'll never forget. Just like you and the rest of them, that was my pride and joy, to see kids get to be good kids. That was my ambition. I'd take 2 weeks of my vacation every year and go over and stay at the fair and stuff and help get the fair ready and stuff so the kids would have a place to stay over there. And if I was able to do it, I'd still be doing it. Because there's nothing I think more of than the youth of today. Anything I can do to help so the youth don't get in trouble and stuff, that's what I want to see. And I like to see love, the people with love, not fight.